This is a very strange and frustrating story. To have your family member stolen, murdered, then missing.
I'm Connie Walker, and this is Missing and Murdered, Finding Cleo.
It's such a mystery, such an impossible task. Please, help us find her.
Finding Cleo. If you'd like to hear more, you can find the full season wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. Malaria is still one of humanity's oldest plagues and still one of the deadliest. Each year, it infects close to 250 million people and kills more than 600,000 of them. My next guest is part of an innovative effort to reduce the burden of malaria, perhaps even eliminate it, through gene editing. Abdoulaye Diabaté is the principal investigator for Target Malaria, Burkina Faso. He is in Vancouver for the TED conference, and he joins us from our studio there. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
How would you describe the toll that malaria is taking in 2024?
Well, malaria, as you know, is a number one public health issue in Africa. And I recall that when I was still, a student, if you look at the statistic of malaria at that point, basically we had about 1 million death toll. But fortunately, we had, some really fantastic tools over the last 15 years, I will say, like bed net, to fight, for example, mosquitoes that are transmitting the disease. And it's helped us basically, to reduce dramatically the death toll of malaria. And so right now we have about 600,000 plus death. So from where we're coming, I think we did a really very great achievement. But unfortunately, we got to a point where we realized that the tools that we have in hand now basically have reached their fundamental protective limit. And if we don't have new tools to help what is already out there, we will never be able to cross the last mile of malaria elimination. So I will say that we are coming from really very far, but there is still quite a long way to go to be able, to eliminate the disease.
You know how serious this is from a personal perspective. You had a serious case of malaria when you were, 5 years old?
Yeah, absolutely. I was born and raised in Burkina Faso, which is in West Africa, so in a rural area. So all my life, basically, I've been experiencing malaria as a kid, but also now I'm a dad, so I can also experience, malaria through my kid. So it's really something traumatizing. And this is one of the reasons, basically, why I decided, to be a scientist and see how I can help my community and then my country as well. So,
What was your own experience with the disease? What was that like?
Well, I recall that, I had several episodes of malaria. I can't even count, but there was one which was really, 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 very bad. I think I was maybe 3 or 4 years at that time. And it was that serious that I was just laying down there on the bed, with high fever. I couldn't eat anything, vomiting all the time. And I could even see through the eyes of my parents that they were really very worried for my life. Unfortunately, they think that they were really kind of powerless. And you were just sitting there, is going to survive or is going, to pass away at some point. You really don't know. So it's really very traumatizing.
You survived, but two of your young cousins died because of malaria.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, from my family, yes. And then even from other family, friends, relatives that I know so many people who pass away, unfortunately, due to malaria.
And so do you see that, the experience you went through, as a direct line to the work that you're doing now? That work is inspired by what you went through?
Absolutely. Because if you think about it, so this is something which is preventable, but still it's killing so many people. And with the advent of new technology coming out now, I think it's really amazing to see, there is something that can be a paradigm-changing game. So if you can apply that, and then it's going to really reduce dramatically the burden of the disease in the country, it will be really fine. So this is one of the reasons why I really became a scientist, in fact.
So tell me about this work that you're doing. How could genetically modifying mosquitoes help to tackle the scourge of malaria?
Well, the genetically modified approach, to tackle malaria mosquitoes is really novel way. Absolutely, I will say, with the gene drive. In that sense, that what you do is that you just target specific characteristic we call threat in mosquitoes. For example, for mosquitoes to transmit a disease, obviously mosquitoes need to be there. The highest density you have, then most likely you will have malaria transmission. And so the way you can do that, either you tackle mosquitoes in a way that you reduce their fertility, and that's going to reduce mosquito population in the field. So less mosquitoes mean also less malaria transmission. And then you have the second approach whereby you can also do the modification in a way that mosquitoes will not be able to host the parasite of the malaria. Mm. But our approach is, you know, to focus mostly on what we call the suppression, which is, you know, reducing mosquito density. So what we do here is that we have a specific genes in mosquitoes that control the fertility. And if you identify this gene, then you work and then you alter them in a way that is going to reduce the reproductive capacity of mosquitoes. And if you release these mosquitoes in the field, then they're going to spread the gene to the wild counterpart population. And gradually you will see that it's going to reduce mosquito population. And then if you get to a point where the density is extremely low, then it's just going to cut the malaria transmission.
So I'm going to ask what seems like probably a stupid question, but how do you go about genetically modifying a mosquito?
Well, the thing is that in the first place, you need to understand the architecture of the genome of mosquitoes and then try to identify some genes that are of interest to you. For example, the one that I was just telling about, which is in control of the fertility of mosquitoes. So once you identify that, now then you can alter this gene. So what we do is that with CRISPR editing, genome editing tools, so you can go specifically in the very specific place of the genome. Then you cut it, and then you insert something to disturb the function of the gene. And then you take that now, you have a very little needles that we call the micro-injection.
They would be very little if they're a mosquito.
Extremely little, really. And so you take the eggs of mosquito, and then you inject it in there. And then your construct is just going to be incorporated in the genome of mosquitoes. And once it's incorporated, then mosquitoes just going, you know, to amplify it and then spread it across the rest of the population in the field.
So this is, you mentioned CRISPR. This is the gene editing technology that is kind of like a pair of scissors where you can snip out the bits that you want or alter the bits that you want.
Exactly. And this is really very cool tools because, you know, before the CRISPR, it was really very difficult to do the modification. Not that it was not possible, but it was taking, you know, a lot of time and then a lot of fun as well. But this is really precision, a method that you can just do your modification in just 1 month or even less. And if it's worked, then you have something to go to the field.
And so once you have done that, as you said, you have edited the genes of the mosquito. Then what happens? You get a lot of mosquitoes, you do this, and they are released out into the world?
Yeah, exactly. So once this is done, then you keep these mosquitoes in the lab, then you maintain them, and then you amplify. But getting, you know, the mosquitoes per se is good, but it's not enough, you know, to take it to the field because, you know, this is genetically modified organism. Then there is a lot of regulation around that. Mm-hmm. You cannot just take that outside and then do the release. You need, you know, to get the authorization from the regulatory body in your country. But when it's come to Jindra per se, given that once you release this mosquito, then they're going to cross border, you know, with the neighboring country. So it's not just about your own country anymore. So you have a whole region which is, you know, going to be invaded, you know, by this mosquito. So it's really extremely important for all the regulator to come together, work, and then have a kind of harmonized system whereby when you apply in one country and then you have the authorization, then if you release this mosquito there, then even if it's cross-border to go to other countries, so the other people are fine with that. I think this is something that the technical branch of the African Union is already working on it. So they brought together all the different regulators, be it environmental regulator, health regulator, agriculture regulator, all these people together from 15 countries in West Africa, they're all working together basically to prepare, you know, the field for that.
Because the mosquitoes aren't going to respect borders. They're going to fly out wherever they fly.
Exactly. And so this is something that they are doing first in West Africa. And then from there, they will, you know, replicate the same thing in Central Africa because they have also regional body there and also in East Africa. But beyond also the regulation, there is one other thing which is extremely important that you have to keep in mind, which is the, you know, the public acceptance. Mm. So you cannot just take the mosquitoes going to the field and then do the release because you think that it's going to do good. So you need, you know, to engage the community in the first place, make sure really that there is a very good understanding of the work that you are doing in full transparency. And this is something which is really taking time. But I'm really very happy to see that in Burkina Faso, people are really very understanding it well.
How many mosquitoes would you be releasing into the wild to change the composition of the population as a whole?
Yeah, that's really, you know, the beauty of this technology, because if you take the conventional tools like bird nets, for example, bird nets has done an incredible job of cutting down the death toll of malaria. But the problem not only that you have the problem of resistance emerging, you know, to the insecticide that you have in bed net, but the logistic, even, you know, to deploy bed net across the continent. It means that you have to go to every single village to be able, you know, to deliver that. And it's make it really very difficult. And not only that, every 3 or 5 years, you have to replace all the bed net completely because they're going to be useless by 5 years. But with this technology, what is really interesting is that you just select a few villages, you release a bit of mosquitoes there, and the mosquitoes just going to do the job for you because they are the one who will be taking, you know, your gene of interest, and then they will spread it across the entire landscape of wherever mosquitoes are, because mosquitoes are kind of a little bit connected from villages to villages. So the mosquitoes will fly with the gene of interest and then will spread it across the entire continent. And the good thing is that you don't have to go pretty much everywhere and then do the job.
The mosquitoes do the job for you.
Yeah, mosquitoes do the job for you, even in very remote villages where you don't have a road, you know, to get access, or maybe in places also where you have a political instability or all these things. So mosquitoes are just going to do the job for you. And once you release them, and then they will just spread the gene. And this is where, I mean, it's become really very interesting. And then it's kind of paradigm shift. And we really hope. The mathematical model basically predict that if you take a specific area, you do the release in just 20 generations, this is like 2 years, it's just going to spread and then going to halt malaria transmission in this region. And I'm really very excited about it.
That's incredible. Do you think that this could be used for other diseases that are carried by mosquitoes as well? I think of like Zika or West Nile. Could this idea be applied here as well?
Yeah, Zika, West Nile, or dengue. Mm-hmm. I know that some people are already contemplating that in the U.S., trying to work, you know, for mosquitoes that transmit, for example, dengue. And so it's kind of a little bit behind for the mosquito that transmit malaria. But people are, in fact, contemplating that they might be able, you know, to put something in place in the future and be able to fight this disease as well.
Do we know what the ecological impact of releasing thousands, millions of genetically modified mosquitoes into the environment is?
Yeah, well, okay, so this is kind of a little bit different, you know, from the conventional genetically modified mosquitoes, because if you don't have the gene drive in it, then you have really to inundate, you know, your area. It means that you have to release pretty much all the time, but huge number of mosquitoes. But with gene drive, you don't really have to do that. You release just a little bit, and then it's just going to take off. But I think the idea basically going to be the same. Even in gene drive, if you release only a little bit of mosquitoes, the important thing is that it's the gene that you want to spread. But now, the question is that what is going to be the ecological impact? Now, you can look at a different perspective. Like, for example, the species that we are targeting, we call it Anopheles gambiae, which is the major malaria vector transmitter in Africa. So very often people ask the question, okay, if you target this species and then you're removing it from the ecosystem, what is going to happen? Number one, either you have, you know, maybe some specific predator that are feeding on these mosquitoes, and then if you relieve these mosquitoes, what is going to happen to this predator? So we've conducted, you know, a number of studies in West Africa, specifically in Ghana, you know, to look at all these questions. In fact, we found that there is no evidence to show that there is any single predator that feed obligatory only on this species of mosquito.
Okay, so let's just stop there because that's important. There are things that need to eat mosquitoes, right? And the belief is that if you change the mosquitoes that are out there or you eliminate some of those mosquitoes, that there will be knock-on effects down the road. So do we know whether that's going to happen?
Exactly. And this is the kind of thing that we are looking at now. And then the result that we have so far show that you don't have any predator that really feed only on this species of mosquitoes. And by the way, you have to keep in mind also that you have more than 3,000 species of mosquitoes around the world. And only in Africa, you have 600 plus species of mosquitoes. And so we are targeting just only one species, which transmits malaria. Well, I will say complex species. And within this complex of species, you have three major malaria vectors, which is Anopheles gambiae, Colutzi, and then Anopheles arabiensis. They are, you know, transmitting more than 90% of the total burden of malaria in Africa. So we are targeting only these three species. And if you remove that, then you still have 600 and plus species of mosquitoes still in Africa that the predator can feed on. And one of the things also very important that we look at are these mosquitoes, you know, participating in pollination. But there have been no evidence so far with the data that we have to show that the mosquitoes are, you know, involved in the pollination. And the other question also that people ask sometimes is that, okay, if these mosquitoes, for example, are, you know, cohabiting in a specific environment with other species of mosquitoes, and if you remove these mosquitoes, what is going to happen? Maybe you're going just to create a kind of vacuum. Are other species coming, you know, to occupy this niche? And then maybe they will bring more problem than what we had before, you know, with this mosquito. But when you look at the specific composition of mosquitoes in the different breeding site, very often you have Gambia, Colutzi, to some extent Arabiensis in the same breeding site. But they don't necessarily with other species utilize, you know, the same breeding size, meaning that the specific resources that these mosquitoes need in the environment are kind of really bit different from what the other mosquitoes want. So
you're not worried about, you know, unforeseen consequences once you people. This is the great concern around genetic modification, is that you can change one thing, but that there is a cascading waterfall sort of effect.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say that I'm not worried, but I wouldn't also think that this is something which is really huge. Mm. Obviously, as a scientist, a technology developer, we have to be aware of that. If there is any sensible question or concern that people have, and that we feel that we can turn that into specific research question and then address the concern before we can move ahead, we do it.
I told the court that I'm wrong to imprison.
Mr. Sims, you are not to address the jury.
There's too much being hid from you.
You need to be taken out of the court.
There's too much.
He was one small man in a giant wheel caught.
Well, I do wish to say that it's official that I'm wrongfully imprisoned right now.
Uncover, Season 7. Dead Wrong.
I asked him if he killed Pipple. He said yes, and I'd be next.
Available on CBC Listen and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let me play you something, because it's not just me asking questions around this. I want to play you something from, this is a video produced by the ETC group. It's a Montreal-based advocacy group. It spoke with opponents of this technology, gene drive technology, in Burkina Faso. Take a listen to this.
Tout ça nous inquiète. Une expérience, une toute première expérience, qui commence par nous. Être des cobayes d'une telle expérience, il y a de quoi s'inquiéter.
That's Dauda Kamba Utara of Yanamar. It's a human rights organization in Burkina Faso. And he says he's worried about being a guinea pig in this new experiment. What do you say to somebody who thinks that they're going to be guinea pigs?
Well, I don't think this is really the right way of seeing things, because the problem is that obviously we are working, you know, with some collaborator in Europe or even in the U.S. But you don't have malaria in the U.S. You don't have malaria in Europe neither. So even if they have mosquitoes there and then they want to test it and you don't have malaria, what are you going to test? It has to go to some places where you have malaria and then test and just make sure that it's going to work. Mm. And so if you come to Africa also, I mean, it has to be tested somewhere. But in this place, basically what you need to have, you need to have the technical competences, and then you have also need to have the regulatory body, which is really ready also, you know, to evaluate all the different risks. Because when people say, okay, guinea pig, all the invention and thing that we have, it has been tested first. The most important thing is that, are we aware of the different concerns that people are raising? Are we trying, you know, to address them, making sure that what we're going to deliver is going to be used in a very safe way?
And that's the buy-in that you were talking about earlier, making sure that people feel as though they can believe in this project, that you have local buy-in before you deploy something like this.
Exactly. And then the really very important thing is that people have to realize it's not like this being parachuted, you know, from somewhere. Right now, you come to my team. So we are building a critical mass of next generation scientists just to make sure that we have a really very clear and good understanding of this technology that we can engineer ourselves. We have all the technical platform, you know, to do it. And before any single mosquitoes of gene drive is going to be taken, you know, to the field, we have to look at all these different concerns that are reasonable that people are raising. Hmm. Just as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you that, for example, the project has started in Burkina Faso in 2012. And right now, we already have gene drive mosquitoes in the lab, not in Burkina Faso, but with our collaborator in Europe. The gene drive mosquitoes are already there. And releasing mosquitoes in the field is not going to take you more than 30 minutes. But can you believe that we have started since 2012, but we have not released gene drive mosquitoes yet? Why? Because we are really taking time to make sure that we are looking at all these specific concerns coming from people, and that we are addressing these concerns before we can take the mosquitoes. Once we are really the confidence that we've looked at pretty much all the potential risk, reasonable risk that people are raising, and then we have answered to this risk, this is only after that, that if we get the authorization from the regulatory body, that we will take this mosquito to the field. And also this is going to be done in conjunction with the community. Talking to the community, engaging the community, making sure that there is a very good understanding, and then that we have a public license to operate before we can take the mosquitoes to the field.
How important is it, and you've talked about this before, how important is it to have African leadership in this area of science?
It's critical, really extremely important, because given that this is really new technology and there is a lot of concern around it, so people will feel really a bit skeptical, and then they will be afraid, yeah, to know that, to see that, you know, their own people do not have a good understanding of that. And they don't have the technical platform also even, you know, to be able to analyze all the things or to engineer themselves. But if Africans themselves have a really very good understanding, so it means that the community also know who they can rely on, they can connect to. If there is any specific question or concern, they can talk to.
That this is being leaders. Brought in from somewhere else, that this exactly. is actually indigenous to the community and related and understood by the community.
Exactly. And then these leaders basically also are living in Africa. Their families are there. Their children are there. And so they're not going to bring something really that they don't believe in and then release, and then it's going to be catastrophic for everybody. But they are living also in the same context with them. So it's really very important for the African continent that we have leaders, you know, technical capacity to understand this and be able, you know, to manage it on our own.
How soon do you think you'll be able to deploy this, that the mosquitoes would be released en masse?
Yeah, this was what I was telling you. The Jindrai mosquitoes already exist in the lab, even though it's not in Africa, but with our collaborator, we already have these mosquitoes. But due to the fact that we have, you know, to have all the different concerns, the, you know, community engagement aspect, the regulation, so I would say that we still have maybe something like 4 to 5 years to be really ready and then release it. Because once again, I said, if you release in one country, Jindrai mosquito just going to spread across the borders to go into other countries. So we need to bring all these countries together so they can work collectively and then have an urbanized regulatory system. So it's going to take a little bit more time again. But I can tell you, in many places already now in Burkina Faso, people are really waiting, you know, this technology to come. Mm. There is a lot of expectation that had been built around it.
You said you yourself, you're a dad?
Yeah, I'm a dad.
And so having gone through what you went through and lost cousins to this, could you see a point at which in the lives of your children, malaria might be eradicated, that it might not be something that they have to worry about at all?
Yeah, well, I will say that a few years back, if someone had told me that we will be able, you know, to eliminate malaria in the coming years, decade, I will be really kind of a little bit skeptical. Mm. But right now, with all the technology that are, you know, coming up, there is a really good hope that malaria can be eliminated in our lifetime.
In your lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. But again, here it's not just about the technical tools. You need to have a very good compliance, making sure really that this technology is taken up, you know, by the population or by the community and is used effectively. So as much authorization that we can get, that is going to help a lot. And also at the community side, just making sure that we have a really very good understanding and we have a public license, you know, from the community to operate. So if all these things are in place, you know already that we have vaccine. We have 2 vaccines against malaria mm-hmm. now. Even those, my feeling is that this vaccine will not eliminate malaria. It's going to reduce really dramatically, you know, the burden of malaria, but it will not be able, you know, to take us to malaria elimination. So bringing this new other tool like GeneDrive in the toolbox to expand, you know, the toolbox, I think there is really very good chance if there is really very good compliance with all these tools that we have in hands today, that we will be able to eliminate malaria in my lifetime, if not in the lifetime of my kids.
That's really quite something to say. Abdoulaye Diabaté, it's great to speak with you about your work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Abdoulaye Diabaté is the principal investigator for Target Malaria Burkina Faso. He's in Vancouver, where he is one of the speakers at this year's TED conference.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.